It's Thursday, April 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello, glad you're with us. Coming up, just when you thought you knew the story, the U.S. presidential campaign twists again. Earthquake ravaged Nepal through the eyes of a visitor. The world's largest company disappoints investors, maybe.
Participation in these play sessions with music improved these babies' ability to extract and detect patterns in sound.
How music helps babies learn, maybe us too. It's all on today's International Edition. A full day has not passed since Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton scored multiple wins in state primaries, seemingly putting them on the clear path to nomination by their respective parties. But Republican rival Ted Cruz is not giving up his fight to be president and has taken the campaign in a new direction.
It's tradition that a vice presidential nominee is announced at the convention. It is unusual to make the announcement as early as we're doing so now. Well, I think all would acknowledge this race, if anything, it is unusual.
And his running mate is former Republican presidential hopeful Carly Fiorina.
Last night it was pretty clear. Everybody in the media, the establishment, the elites, they all said, well, it's over. I mean, it's over. Donald Trump won. But it isn't over. It isn't over because you and people all across the great Hoosier state, people all across this nation know that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both will be disastrous for this nation.
Will the Cruz-Carly Fiorina tactic succeed in blocking a first ballot Trump nomination at the Republican convention in July? And if so, will Cruz be able to win the nomination on a subsequent ballot? Well, we turn to VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone for his thoughts on where this might lead the candidates on the road to the White House.
It's unusual in a number of ways, mostly because it's just not done this early. We are a few months before the national convention, but I think it speaks to what's going on in the Republican race. And frankly, for those opposed to Donald Trump, we have reached the stage of desperation. And one of the ways that the anti-Trump forces believe they can at least slow down Trump is that if Ted Cruz can pull off a win in Indiana this coming Tuesday, and Cruz apparently has decided that he needs to bolster his campaign, make a bold move, and try to take some of the momentum away from Donald Trump. And he's chosen Carly Fiorina, the former Hewlett-Packard executive, and someone who ran in this cycle's presidential primaries in the Republican side, but left fairly early. So it's kind of a bold stroke by Cruz. We don't know what impact it will have yet, but clearly he sees the importance of trying to beat Trump in Indiana. And let's face it, they have to try to beat him there to try to force a contested convention, which is the only way at this point anyone but Donald Trump can become the Republican nominee.
And a part of the equation is Ohio Governor John Kasich, who by some accounts said that he would step aside in this Indiana race. Will this really happen? Will people still vote for him? Will that still dilute Cruz's effect? We don't know.
That's right. But there was a loose agreement made, and it was perhaps too little too late. But the thinking is to isolate Cruz against Trump in Indiana. The polls that I've seen give Trump a slight lead, but one that couldn't necessarily be overcome by a last-minute surge by Cruz. And the Cruz campaign is hoping that the selection of Fiorina will fire up some of his supporters, maybe bring in some other Republicans who have been reluctant to embrace Trump, in line with the Cruz view that Trump and Hillary Clinton are somehow Washington insiders, and that Cruz is now the only remaining outsider who can challenge that, and bringing in another non-politician in Carly Fiorina.
Well, among the Democrats, we feel fairly certain that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee, at least by the math. By the rhetoric, it sounds like Bernie Sanders is still very much active.
I think there's a lot of disappointment and frustration in the Sanders camp. They believe they've captured the imagination of Democratic voters to some extent. They believe they've added something to this race the Democratic Party will benefit from. So if they are going to come to the point where Clinton will be the nominee, it's kind of almost like they want respect paid. They want something for it. It looks as though Sanders would like to have a big voice in shaping the party platform. But how much of a role he'll have is, it's too early to say.
Well, while Bernie Sanders seeks to be that big voice, our big voice is senior VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
We stay with the issue of U.S. politics as social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins us in the studio to tell us what people are thinking about it online. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. U.S. politics is definitely trending online, and it looks like the Republican candidates are getting the bulk of the attention. And like you mentioned earlier, Ted Cruz's announcement on the choice of his running mate this afternoon came as a surprise to many. He posted a video of the announcement on his Facebook page, and here are a couple of the replies. One person wrote, "Ted Cruz, the only conservative, a principled man with integrity. Never Trump." Obviously, that's Cruz's supporter. Another person replied to that tweet, writing, "Why is this even in the news? That guy lost." Many other people criticized Cruz for, quote-unquote, colluding with John Kasich against Trump. Now, another reason why that announcement is trending is because Carly Fiorina busted out singing to Ted Cruz's children on stage after his announcement. Did you check out the video?
I saw that, yes.
It's quite a scene, right? It's hard to describe how it went, but let's just say it was like American Idol meets businesswoman slash VP hopeful.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's move on to Donald Trump.
Two things trending regarding Trump today. First, it's about what he said during a victory speech Tuesday. He said he considers himself the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party because he won all five states that held primaries Tuesday. He's also trending online because Amal Clooney, a world-renowned human rights lawyer and wife of actor George Clooney, shared her thoughts about him on BBC. She said she's perplexed by his success in the presidential campaign and discussed some of his comments on Muslims. Clooney is a British Lebanese and her parents are Muslim, although it's unclear whether she's also Muslim herself.
Well, it's no surprise that she's not on the Trump train because her husband is a big supporter of Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The couple hosted a fundraiser for Clinton earlier this month at their home in Los Angeles. Jim, back to you.
Well, thanks for the wrap-up, G. She tweets for our program's account at VOA underscore IE. You can also find her at G. Abby Lee, and I'm there as well on Twitter at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Nepal continues a slow recovery from massive earthquake damage suffered a year ago this week. Elijah Wolfson, a senior editor for Newsweek, has revisited the country and joins us with what he saw in his travels there.
I went out there during the last week of March to see where they were about a year later. I'd actually been on the ground in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake a year ago. So it had been about 12 months since I had been there. But yes, I was visiting. I traveled around and went to a number of different, what they call village development communities outside of the main urban areas to sort of see what was going on in the more rural, hard-to-reach areas.
So you had a very good comparative view of this right after it happened and a year later.
Yeah, although I would say, unfortunately, I've never gotten to visit or see the country, you know, when it wasn't in a sort of disaster response or recovery situation.
From a personal standpoint, what did you expect to find and what surprised you?
I'm not sure what I expected to find. I knew that it wasn't going to be, this miracle of recovery where everyone's homes had been rebuilt and things were, had returned to a complete level of normalcy. I certainly did expect things like roads to be open and stores to be open. And that wasn't the case in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake. Everything shut down. Nobody could really get anywhere. And, you know, what I found was more or less what I expected. Things have returned to some level of normalcy. People are going to work more. The roads are clear. You can get from place to place. Traffic has increased. I would say what was kind of most surprising was how little rubble was actually cleared in a lot of places. So while I didn't expect things to have been rebuilt, I also didn't expect people to be basically stuck living next to their destructed homes. A lot of them said they couldn't even afford the cost of having the rubble cleared or hauled away. And so that was somewhat surprising.
Well, your article put it in very good perspective against the previous earthquake in Haiti, where 100,000 people died. 9,000 died in this, which is bad enough. But that left a lot of people remaining to rebuild. And they've had a lot of struggles economically, and as you mentioned, and just gathering the basic materials to rebuild.
Yeah, I think the estimate, so the official estimate is 500,000 families were left homeless by the two earthquakes. They were actually kind of twin earthquakes. There was the first one, and then the next day there was one almost as big. But most aid groups think that number is, that estimate is very low. And so, you know, the Red Cross, for example, estimates it's more like 4 million families homeless. And the financial hit has been massive. The economic losses are estimated to be about $7 billion. The World Bank predicts that the annual GDP growth rate in the country is going to plummet precipitously for this year. It was actually doing quite well. Nepal was a country that was kind of on the rise to some extent, and the GDP growth rate was hovering in, you know, around 4.5% every year in the early 2010s. Now it's predicted to be just 1.7% in 2016, and hundreds of thousands of people have been pushed into poverty there. You're right, the silver lining is that not as many fatalities resulted from the earthquake, and that was primarily because it happened on the weekend, and so kids were not in their schools. People in rural Nepal, where the most damage was done, they tend to spend their weekends and free time outside. There was a lot less death and physical harm done here than might have been expected, which was, like I said, the silver lining here.
Elijah Wolfson is a senior editor with Newsweek. His article, 1 year after a devastating earthquake, Nepal is still in ruins, is online. Elijah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We check financial markets now, where investors have been looking at hundreds of companies this week as they reveal their earnings for the first quarter of the year, and overall, the earnings are not as strong as hoped. Still, the markets remain buoyant on hopes the overall U.S. economy is steady and oil prices have now settled into a predictable range. The world's largest company, Apple, missed its target earnings as sales have slowed, and a lower stock price reflected disappointment in that news. VOA Economics reporter Jill Malandrino joins us now from New York for more.
Yeah, Jim, you know what? They were disappointing. It was the first time that they've had a sales miss in over 13 years, but company stock can only go up so long. You're not going to have a straight trajectory to the upside forever. I think what we're seeing with Apple right now is a transition from an innovator to more of a services company, where we're going to see less reliance on the iPhone, iPad, iMac cycles, where Apple might be looking at services right now relative to enterprise, to tying your entire online application ecosystem to one product. That's where I think they're going to start generating income from at this point. Thing is, with Apple, even though this particular quarter was a miss, They took up their dividend. They bought another $35 billion worth of stock. This is one of the most cash-rich, most pristine balance sheets on the street. And maybe they're perhaps going to start looking at buying some of these younger innovators because at the end of the day, Apple has matured as a company.
Well, and a 7% drop in stock may just be a little bit heavy-handed in terms of reaction.
Right. That is a bit heavy-handed, but this can also offer an opportunity for investors who have been looking to get into the market since a February 11th low, and they just did not know what the entry point was because we've rallied 15% since then. So this could be that entry point that investors are looking for. Now, when I put on my trading hat, and this is how I trade my own accounts, I don't like to go in and buy or sell a stock after the earnings print. I like to let the price action consolidate a bit so we can establish new ranges in the stock, because last week, Apple was trading at 110. It's gotten as low as in the 96 level today. We need to let those ranges get established to identify better entry points. So this could be a gift for people who have been looking to get in but just couldn't identify the right buy.
Well, speaking of entry points, the Fed is looking for a point to perhaps raise interest rates. What's happening with them?
Well, the general consensus is that we probably will not see that until after the election. The Federal Reserve announced it will not take up interest rates today at the April meeting. The communique from this meeting was essentially a copy and paste from March, although I find it interesting they took out the term global risk from the April communique. So perhaps this could be setting up for a more hawkish backdrop after the election. Economic data is improving. Our unemployment rate is the best it's historically been. And, you know, there is a concern with growth slowing. There is a concern with consumer spend trends, but the market has taken this in stride. Unemployment's at the level where the Fed wants it. So, you know what? If we continue to go on this trend through the summer, once the election is over, I think it would be the right thing for the Fed to do. And market participants are kind of in consensus with that.
Well, it's always the right thing to check in with Jill Malandrino in New York. Jill, thank you for stopping by.
All right. Thank you.
And be sure to follow Jill on Twitter at Options Profits. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Music may help infants learn language and speech. Researchers at the University of Washington's Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences used music like the waltz and some old American favorites like Take Me Out to the Ball Game to find out more. VOA's Lori London spoke with Christina Chow, the lead author of the study, and asked how they went about getting inside the minds of babies.
Basically have these nine-month-old babies come into the lab, and they were randomly assigned to either participate in this music group or they will be in the control group. So for the music group babies, the idea is that they came into the lab for 12 sessions of music play sessions. Each session was 15 minutes long. And in groups of two or three babies, we have them play with parents, and there's an experimenter guiding the parents who will help the babies through a set of activities to learn a particular music rhythm. So we help them learn the, we call the triple meter rhythm. So think of waltz in three. And it's a fairly difficult rhythm for babies at this age to process. That's why we picked it. And the idea is that we engage the babies through movements. So like tapping their feet and bouncing them and helping them shake maracas and all that. On the other hand, the control babies came to the lab for the same amount of sessions. And instead, they were just playing freely with toys and blocks. So after this whole play session period, that was about a month. And then we tested both groups of babies in how their brain processed rhythmic information in both music and speech.
What did you find out?
We found that the babies in the music group had stronger brain responses to these disruptions in both music and speech rhythm in the auditory and prefrontal regions of the brain compared to babies in the control group. And so we think that participation in these play sessions with music improved these babies' ability to extract and detect patterns in sound. And this is a skill that's important both for processing music and speech rhythm.
Just to wrap this up, how is this a unique study?
It's unique in several ways. This is, I would say, the first that we know to have observed this crossover effect from music to speech at the earliest, as early as in infancy, 9 months of age. Kind of talking from another perspective, in infant learning speech sound, this is also the first time we're showing that having experience other than language experience in infancy can also help babies learn speech sound.
Well, we can offer them our International Edition theme song. Thank you so much for listening. Our engineer, Carl Starling, director, Tracy Carter, I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We're so thankful for that you could join us today. Come back again when you can. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and Vietnam are deepening and broadening their ties in many areas. In a speech to university students in Vietnam, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke about the culture required for entrepreneurship to flourish and how all nations and citizens share a stake in cultivating and upholding such a culture. In order for Vietnam to become a leader in technology and innovation, it must encourage an educational system that promotes critical thinking, creativity, and experimentation. Moreover, entrepreneurship and innovation thrive in a policy environment that promotes growth through transparency, the rule of law, the protection of intellectual property, and predictable regulations that enable all companies to compete on a level playing field. The task at hand is for Vietnam to consolidate its two decades of tremendous economic gains. An important means of doing that is through the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of which Vietnam is an original signatory. The TPP is a trade agreement that will bring 40% of the global economy together behind the highest labor, environment, and intellectual property protections in the world. Another central ingredient to Vietnam's economic success is respect for human rights. A vibrant culture of entrepreneurship, said Deputy Secretary Blinken, is almost unimaginable without a foundation of rights and freedoms upon which citizens feel able to pursue their ambitions, express their opinions, and bring their ideas to life. The U.S. urges the government of Vietnam to release all political prisoners and cease harassment, arrests, and prosecutions of journalists, bloggers, civil society activists, or students for exercising their fundamental rights. And finally, Vietnam, as part of the global economy, has a growing responsibility to participate along with the U.S. and others in efforts to tackle issues from international peacekeeping to wildlife trafficking to maritime security, from climate change to civil nuclear energy to global health. The United States looks forward to continuing to expand its partnership with Vietnam.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.